Can you hear me in the back? This mic is working. Okay. Thank you. Good afternoon. Again, I was here for the last meeting, the Mathematical Oncology. I really enjoyed. I thought, like, you know, it's always good to think from outside the box. You guys are very good, so therefore I learned a lot yesterday, during yesterday's session and also today. I would like to thank the organizers again, you know, inviting me again this year. Particularly I have a project with Dr. Kondal with on EMT and bioinformatic modeling. With that, since it's a kind of mathematical modeling as well as oncology workshop, I thought I would kind of go from a different perspective. We all know, like, you know, this is probably more familiar to you guys than I do, like potential energy and kinetic energy. When you put this perspective in respect to cells and the differentiation potential, so you could place, for example, stem cells here. When a stem cell goes down the route and you need something else to push them back to gain again that stem cell properties. I just drew this. Sorry, Skype shouldn't be there. But this is all because of the Wi-Fi from here. If you draw the free energy diagram for differentiation, so you can say a fertilized egg could be at a higher energy, and then you have differentiated cells in the bottom, and you have embryonic stem cells in the middle, and you have adult stem cells. Probably this could be pluripotent stem cells. And then the differentiation program drives the process in this direction. Now, if you just think about, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Yamanaka protocol, which is he took OCT4, NanoOct, SOX2, and MYC into a differentiated cells, and he could convert the differentiated cells into ES-like cells, embryonic stem-like cells. It is called induced pluripotent stem cells. So now if you think about in cancer now, so you do not have those the embryonic stem cells. Rather, you have adult stem cells. So here, in this case, we are just looking at a breast tissue. You have more than 90% of them are in H state, which is a differentiated cell. And you have 5 or maybe more of progenitor cells. Depending on different type of cancer, you have a different ratio of these cell types. And if you go, maybe less than 1% are adult stem cells in a normal breast tissue. And if you look in a cancer, it's a similar scenario. So most of the cancers, again, it varies depending on the cancer type, but on an average, one could say that majority of them are differentiated cells. There are small percentage of them are cancer stem cells. Now, if you put them next to one another, now you can ask the question, who came from whom? In other words, is the cancer stem cells, they came from a differentiated cells, or they came from an adult stem cell through transformation, which we don't know. So there are models right now. We know that cancer stem cells could be derived from normal stem cells through transformation. Are the progenitor cells, according to John Dick, whom I was talking to the other day when he was in Houston, he says the cell which divides the most is progenitor cells, not stem cells. And the differentiated cells are mostly, when they're differentiated, they are pretty much, most of the time, they have terminal route. So they don't, the probability of them dividing higher and acquiring more mutation is low. Therefore, he was hypothesizing that it is these cells which acquire mutation because they have a higher proliferative potential. And are these cells transforming into cancer stem cells? Are adult stem cells transformation and differentiation together gives rise to differentiated cancer cells, et cetera, et cetera. So now, while I was a postdoc in Bob Weinberg's lab, we found that a differentiated cancer cells, when you induce a program called EMT, they can become more cancer stem-like. So this equation we kind of found that. But we'll get to that EMT part in a bit. So how I got into all this EMT and stem cell process? So two postdocs, when I was a postdoc, there are two other postdocs in the time, one guy named is Brian Ellenboss, another one is William Hahn. They took normal human mammary epithelial cells. They introduced three genes, SP40 early region gene, telomerase, and oncogenic form of RAS. When they put these genes, the cells, normal mammary epithelial cells, they got transformed. They become cancerous. When they introduced them into the mice, they formed a tumor. But I was interested in studying metastasis. So I was asking, are they metastatic? So when I tested, they were non-metastatic. This is in a mouse model. You put them in a mammary fat pad and ask, do they metastasize to the lung? They were non-metastatic. So I asked, can I introduce additional genes into these cells and make them metastatic? So when I did that, I introduced a number of genes. None of them really promoted them to become metastatic. So then you go back and read the literature again, and where is the problem? And if you think about metastatic process, it's highly complex process. You have primary tumor, and it recruits new blood vessels, and which you heard from yesterday from Richard Hell quite a bit about this process. And then there are cells from the primary tumor enter into the circulation. They travel, and they get out of the circulation, form a small micrometastatic colony, which eventually develops into secondary tumor. Now, to add additional complexity into this, so this is the early step, is the critical step. So you all know that more than 80% of the cancer which occurs in human being are carcinomas in nature. In other words, tumors of epithelial and tumors from epithelial tissue. And you also know that epithelial tissues are not just free floaters. They are attached with one another through number of cell adhesion molecules, such as tight junction and gap junction, desmosomes, hemidesmosomes, which attaches cells to the matrix, and it's highly organized structure. Now, when a cell like this gets transformed, now it cannot just easily move from one place to another, because they have to break this, so they have to break this bondage. Only then the cell from the primary site can detach and go to the distant site. Now, again, these are the, again, highlighting the same point, cell-cell adhesion, cell-matrix interaction, and they all have, they also have a actin cytoskeleton machinery, which are all organize these cells in a particular way, and they maintain a polarity, because if you look in a breast, the cells, they are beautifully lined. When they produce milk, the milk goes into the duct, not to the opposite side. And the milk, once get into the duct, they don't go back into the cell. Rather, they stay in the duct. It's all because of the polarity and the way cells are organized and cell-cell adhesion. Now, when a cell like this gets transformed, they remain local because they still continue to express all these molecules. So in order for them to leave the primary site, they have to break all this bondage. So we did a small screen looking for genes which could promote this metastatic process. When we did this, we took two cell lines. One is called a 67NR, another one is called a 41. These two are spontaneously derived mouse mammary tumor cell line. This can complete only this much. Can form a primary tumor, can become highly vascularized. This one can form a tumor and complete all the way to this step. And this is from a mammary fat pad to the lung. So when we did that, this is I did in collaboration with Jean Yang, now she's a faculty in UCSD. We found two genes. We found a number of genes. We focused on two genes at that time. One is called TWIST, another one is called FOXC2. So when we knocked or suppressed the expression of either TWIST, in this case, so there's a control group, you can see the number of nodules, the white color structures in the lung. These are metastatic nodules or metastatic tumor. When you block TWIST, you can see those things are reduced in this group. And when you block FOXC2, you do the you see the similar thing. But the striking thing what we observed was that when we overexpressed these genes in an epithelial cell, the cells, they no longer, so the control cells, they look epithelial, in other words, they are attached with one another. When you overexpress either TWIST or FOXC2, they no longer attach with one another, they become loose or single cells. So that suggested that genes capable of inducing this epithelial to mesenchymal transition are necessary for metastasis. So here another graduate student in the Weinberg lab, Tom Erander, he inhibited expression of one of the cell-cell adhesion molecule called E-keragrin using shRNA. And when he put, and these cells become mesenchymal, when he put these cells in the mammary fat pad, they metastasize to the lung spontaneously. So indicating that when you induce EMT, the cells can complete the complete metastatic process. When you inhibit EMT, the cells are incapable of metastasizing from the primary site to the distant site. So the EMT plays an important role here. From number of studies, from number of labs, kind of collectively suggest that this is one of the important processes. So now a tumor cell leaving the primary site, it goes to the distant site and creates a new tumor, which looks just like the primary tumor most of the time. A pathologist could look at a tumor at the lung or liver or spleen and say this tumor is coming from prostate, or they could identify the source. How could they do that? Because the cells reach a distant site, they could recreate an organ just like the primary site. Whose property it is? It's the property of stem cells. So with number of reasons, we hypothesize that the cells which are induced to undergo EMT may also acquire stem cell properties. In fact, that was the case, and this is what is EMT. So EMT has been known to play a critical role during embryo development. For example, the mesoderm coming from epiblast is shown to be mediated by epithelial to mesenchymal transition during embryo development. Similarly, the neural crest cell coming out of neural tube is also mediated by this epithelial to mesenchymal transition. And this process is shown to be reversible during embryo development. For example, the kidney and the ovary are two epithelial organs derived from mesoderm through mesenchymal to epithelial transition. So this process is reversible during embryo development. So here we found that when we induced EMT by expressing either SNAIL or TWIST or TGF beta 1, the cells become more mesenchymal and they become more 44 high, 24 low, which is a property of cancer stem cells. And the most importantly, when we injected these cells into the mice, the cells expressing either SNAIL or TWIST, which underwent EMT into the mice, even with 1,000 cells, they could form a tumor. But the control group, you need at least 1,000,000 cells or 10^5 cells to form a tumor in the control group, indicating that when you induce EMT, you not only provide mesenchymal properties, but also a tumor-initiating potential, the property of cancer stem cells. So again, as we discussed, by inducing EMT, you could push the differentiation program backward to some extent. So I'm sure you all must be familiar with this article, that if you target cancer stem cells, you may be, there is a way that one could treat or cure cancer. But we know that that's more complex than what this article claims in 2004. So now if you look at a cancer stem, so until this point, the work, whatever I described, was done mostly when I was in the Bob Weinberg's lab. So the work what I'm going to discuss now is what we have been doing in my lab at MD Anderson. And so you have cancer stem cells. We know that's a major cause for a number of these problems, including metastasis, chemoresistance, and tumor relapse. Now, one possibility is that normal stem cells get transformed, become cancer stem cells. Now, other possibilities are differentiated cancer cells through EMT. They become mesenchymal-looking cells, and they also display some amount of cancer stem cell properties. Now, if you ask me, are they one and the same? Probably not. They share a lot of properties. So again, the goal is to identify these cells with the mesenchymal properties or the cancer stem cell properties, characterize them, and if possible, target them using pathways specific to EMT, because it's very hard. There are different people are trying to identify stem cell specific pathways. And what we are trying to see is, can we use EMT pathways to target these cells so that we could overcome metastasis, chemoresistance, and tumor relapse? So again, this is the cover page of Bob Weinberg's textbook. Maybe many of you must have seen it. The reason he was excited to put this in his cover page, because in this case, human mammary epithelial cells were injected into mouse mammary fat pad and stained with human-specific cytokeratin and human-specific vimentin. So what you see is that cytokeratin is in red and the vimentin is in green, and the cells at the edge of this tumor, they stained green or vimentin positive, indicating probably those cells would have undergone EMT. But if you do the similar staining in human tumor tissue, you won't be able to differentiate, or we won't be able to differentiate these cells from the neighboring cells, which are fibroblasts. So they are fibroblasts, they have not undergone EMT, they're just local residents, either recruited or resident fibroblasts. It's very difficult to differentiate them. So again, it's a complex tissue where you have a number of cell types. How can we identify a cell which have undergone EMT? So that's one of the tasks we thought we would take in my lab here. So again, if you look at a primary tissue, you have a tumor. Now within the tumor, you could have a few cells which have undergone EMT. And you also have, again, fibroblasts which are contaminating or which are resident locally. Now, one could hypothesize we could use gene expression program to identify cells undergone EMT. So this paper, for example, this is from Vandeweer. They've used gene expression to do a clinical prediction. Yes, it does give a good clinical outcome prediction using gene expression. But the thing is, you cannot account for rare cells using this gene expression procedure. So we thought, so this is a simple analogy, is you take a laptop. I'm sure you guys must have opened a laptop more than I have done. So you know that motherboard is a key element. Within the motherboard, you know the one of the major important element is the processor. So they label it, like in this case, they write Intel Inside, right? So therefore, you know that what is the processor, and they write Intel Inside. And I'm sure you also know now they have an even latest generation processor, and depending on the processor type, you pay a different price. And these processors are fast, and these processors are slow, and etc. Now, so in tumors, you do have a smaller machinery which drives the tumor growth. You could call them as a processor. Can we call that as an EMT inside processor or CSC inside processor? So there is a marker which is used at this point. It's called Wymentin, again, to correlate EMT process. And this is published in this paper that patients who have more Wymentin staining, they did poorly compared to the patients who had low Wymentin. But again, we know that Wymentin is expressed in cells undergone EMT as well as in fibroblasts. Sorry about that again. So the marker, another marker used for stem cells is ALDH. So what we thought that if you induce an EMT and take those cells and perform a gene expression profiling, you would be able to enrich those EMT signature, and we may be able to capture those cells which have undergone EMT in a primary tumor. So we performed a microarray by inducing EMT by exposing cells to TGF beta 1 or snail or twist or goosekite. The cells become mesenchymal, and here is a number of people who helped in this process, and we derived a gene expression signature. And we went back and asked, could this signature identify or predict clinical outcome? It was not sufficient. Just as we predicted, this signature was not sufficient to identify those rare cells which are present in tumor, and as a result, we could not do clinical prediction. However, also we went and tested each one of these genes individually to see whether any one of them could do a clinical prediction. No, it was very hard. So we started for, there's one marker which was able to separate tumor into two groups, but other than that, none of them were able to do a separation. So what we did, so if you cannot predict clinical outcome on a tumor which has got a small percentage of cells which have undergone EMT, can we use the signature to identify tumors which are enriched for the signature? Because the total tumor, let's say if they are made of this EMT stem-like cells, could we identify them using this signature? So here is a paper which came out from Gordon Mills group showing that there is two breast cancer subtypes. They are enriched for this EMT and cancer stem cell properties. They are called Claudin low tumors. So when we used the signature what we derived, and it beautifully predicted that particular tumor subtype. So what we could say is that if there is an EMT and cancer stem cell signature in a primary tumor, particularly in the breast cancer, we could say that could be potentially Claudin low or metaplastic tumor subtype. But we cannot go anything beyond at this point. So similar to this processor, again, our goal is to, can we say there is a different processor, and depending on the processor type, they are good or bad. So that's our goal. So we are still continuing to improve this method, but one thing what we're doing is instead of using a gene expression, we are using an immunohistochemistry for a number of these markers so that hoping to identify those cells which have undergone EMT or displaying cancer stem cell properties and characterize them further. So another place where you can capture these cells is circulating tumor cells. In other words, if you cannot capture in a site where these tumor cells, you have a complex number of cell types, and if you cannot identify those cells which have undergone EMT are displaying cancer stem cell properties, if they want to establish metastasis, they have to pass through the blood circulation. So again, it's showing that cartoon. Sorry about all that. So if you so when the cell passes through the circulation, could we capture them when they are in transit? So here is tumor cells, which is a cartoon from my clinic, showing that tumor cells come and then attach to the distant site and get out and form a tumor there. So if you look at a blood, you have so many different cell types in a blood. So how do you capture these cells? So there is a kit which is available at right now. It's called Cell Search by this company called Veridex. There is a number of new companies that are in the market making this kit to purify tumor cells. But what they are all doing is that they are using this marker called EpCAM, which is an epithelial-specific antigen, and they are purifying EpCAM positive CD45, which is present in white blood cells. So CD45 negative, EpCAM positive, and these cells you can get rid of. So EpCAM positive cells is what is purified at this point to characterize circulating tumor cells. So Massimo Cristofanelli, when he was at MD Anderson, he collected circulating tumor cells. Somebody commented yesterday, why 7.5 ml? Because yesterday somebody was showing data about circulating tumor cells. The reason 7.5 ml, because most of the time in patients, you cannot draw a lot of blood. So you just keep a small arbitrary number, and 7.5 ml. And in that, when they looked, the patients who had more than 5 circulating tumor cells, they did poorly compared to the patients who had less than 5 circulating tumor cells. Again, this is based on EpCAM. Now let's bring, so this is another big study in that they looked at number of tumor types using the same method, and normal patients or tumors, benign tumor patients, they did not have much tumor cells, but different cancer types, you see a spectrum of circulating tumor cells. Now, if you take this EMT into context, so that you have differentiated cells, these cells behave like stem cells. Now during EMT, these cells break this barrier, and one of them is EpCAM. This is epithelial specific antigen. So if you take a spectrum of cells which tumor could shed into the circulation, you have an epithelial looking cells which could be entering into the circulation due to leaky vessels. And you could have cells which have undergone complete EMT, which is more mesenchymal. And you could have the EpCAM, in theory, should go down over the process of during EMT. And number of EMT markers will go up here. And so no EMT, and there is complete EMT. And you could also have some cells which have undergone partial EMT. They need not undergo complete EMT in order for them to get into the circulation. So partial EMT. So the cell search method will detect, or whatever the method which uses the EpCAM, will detect these cells and these cells, but not the right population. So how do we test that? So what we did, we took 7.5 ml of blood, and that we did a spiking experiment. We spiked human mammary epithelial cells, which mimics this, and we spiked some 149, which mimics these cells. They do have EpCAM, and they do have EMT properties also. And we spiked cells which have undergone complete EMT, in this case, twist-expressing cells. When we did that, and we looked for, can we capture these cells using circulating tumor cell kit? And these cells could be detected easily using that CTC detection kit, and these ones could be detected, but these ones we could not. Sorry about that. It's really... So we used... So then what we did, we just modified this CTC detection system. Instead of using those any of those EpCAM, we just did a CD45 negative selection and looked for expression of these markers associated with EMT. So no EpCAM, just a CD45 negative selection, get rid of the hematopoietic cells, and then you do RT-PCR for these markers, twist, nails, slugs, F1. Now we have an extensive markers. Look for these markers in those CD45 negative tumor cells, which includes EpCAM positive, EpCAM negative, half EMT, full EMT, etc. So these patients, in this case, the 84 patients were analyzed. 15 of them had at least one of these markers. So when we looked at their overall clinical outcome, again, those who had at least one transcription factor high in their circulation, in the tumor cells, they did poorly. This is time in months compared to patients who had no expression of these factors in their blood. So we are in the process of now expanding this. We filed an IP and then expanding this CTC profiling in a high throughput manner. So the second thing is, can we identify a new marker to purify the circulating tumor cells or to identify cells which have undergone EMT or cancer stem cells? So as of now, so we all use the CD44 high and CD24 low as a way to purify cancer stem cells. So this story, what I'm going to say, just got accepted last week in Journal of Clinical Investigation, showing, we'll go through that. So these cells are shown to be the cancer stem cells or using number of assays. So a postdoc, Lokesh Bhatla, in collaboration with Michael Andreev's lab, found that he was working on mesenchymal stem cells. So we also, I'm not showing the data, that mesenchymal stem cells are derived from human bone marrow. They are capable of differentiating into osteoblasts, adipocytes, chondrocytes, and etc. So we found that the human mammary epithelial cells, when they undergo EMT, they can also differentiate into osteoblasts, adipocytes, chondrocytes, similar to mesenchymal stem cells. So based on this observation, so Lokesh thought, can I use the markers which are expressed in mesenchymal stem cells to purify cancer stem cells? So he selected a number of markers, and one of them is GD2. GD2 is a gangliocyte. So he tracks them for just a GD2, one marker, no 44 and 24, just one marker. So the cells were fractionated into these way. So here's the CD44 and CD24. Then what he did, he took these cells, I think the arrows are missing, there's an arrow here. He took the GD2 positive cells, asked, are they 44 high and 24 low? They were 44 high and 24 low. When he took the GD2 negative population, they were mostly 44 low and 24 high. And he did the reverse experiment. Took the 44 high, 24 low cells, and he asked, are they GD2 positive? They're mostly 85% of them are GD2 positive. And he took the 44 low, 24 high cells, they're mostly GD2 negative. So in other words, instead of using two markers, and it's a relative, right? 44 high means what? What high? And 24 low means how low? But here with one marker, positive versus negative, we could separate them and get the 44 high, 24 low population just with the one marker. So then what he did, again, he took the GD2 positive cells, he plated them in a petri dish, they appeared more mesenchymal, and the GD2 negative cells appeared more epithelial. And when he performed a SPEAR assay, which is a assay for stem cells, you could see the GD2 positive cells form more SPEAR compared to GD2 negative cells. Here is a single cell per well, and here is a quantification that GD2 negative cells form 10 SPEAR, GD2 positive cells could form more than 30 SPEARs, and similar thing with another cell line too. So he took these cells, introduced them to the mice in limiting dilution, and found that GD2 positive cells could form tumor even with the 10 cells, and GD2 negative cells can also form, but with a low efficiency compared to GD2 positive cells. So then he went and took so many different breast cancer cell lines and asked, do they all have GD2 positive fraction? So he looked at CD44 high fraction, and you can see some of these cells are 100% CD44 high and they are CD24 low, but they are not all the cells are stem cells, which we know that. So, but when he does GD2 positive fractionation, and he finds in these cells only 9.7% of them are GD2 positive, in this case 8.5, 17, and 1.2. And it's a spectrum. So reviewers wanted to know, is this true only for cell lines, but also true for tumors? So he went and collected tumors from 12 different human patients, and took all the patient sample, and again analyzed them for GD2 positive fraction. So there's a spectrum again. So when he took one of the tumor samples from a human patient and did the similar analysis, the GD2 positive are mostly 44 high, 24 low, and GD2 negative are mostly CD44 low and 24 high. So now the question is, if you take CD44 high, CD24 low, and GD2 positive and GD2 negative, and you do the microarray analysis, and take this gene signature, and the genes which are underexpressed in the 44 high, 24 low cells are also underexpressed in GD2 positive fraction. And the cells which are the genes which are induced or expressed at a higher level in the 44 high, 24 low fraction are also expressed in higher level in the GD2 positive fraction. In other words, one could use GD2 as a marker to purify these cells instead of using 44 high and 24 low. So I'm not showing because due to time. So he did a number of analysis. One of them is to look for small molecules which could target this pathway. And there is a group, they found that this triptolide, which is a small molecule, which could inhibit an enzyme called a GD3 synthase. GD3 synthase is involved in the production of GD2. So when you use this chemical, triptolide, so here is a control group, they formed tumor. When he introduced or injected triptolide to the mice harboring these tumors, they grew slow. And he did a number of control experiments to show that triptolide, in fact, inhibits GD2 production and through GD3 synthase. So here is tumor size in centimeter. You can see that over a period of time, the tumor growth is inhibited when you expose them to triptolide, and also this is percentage survival is also extended. And you could get similar results even by inhibiting GD3 synthase, the enzyme involved in producing GD2. So this is the conclusion that the genes capable of inducing EMT are necessary for spontaneous metastasis. The genes capable of inducing EMT are also sufficient to promote spontaneous metastasis. Induction of EMT results in acquisition of stem cell properties. This EMT signature, it correlates with the highly aggressive tumor type but cannot do a clinical prediction. And circulating tumor cells with the EMT properties correlate with clinical poor clinical outcome. GD2 identifies cancer stem cells in breast cancer, and we are in the process of expanding into other tumor type as well. And triptolide could inhibit GD3 synthase, and through that you can also inhibit tumor growth in this case. So we are, in my lab, again we are in the process of understanding the biology of this process and then see whether you could inhibit these cells. We are not trying to induce differentiation because there are a number of recent reports which shows that if you induce differentiation, you increase metastasis. You don't, a couple of review articles came up recently showing that differentiation therapy. So you can induce differentiation and then kill those cells, because once the cells are differentiated, they are amenable to chemotherapy. But some people have tried to induce differentiation using microRNAs or another means. But instead of reducing metastasis, it increased metastasis. So it's possible, differentiation therapy, but depending on what stage we are testing or we are doing, so it becomes a problem. So we are not going into that. Rather, we have done a small molecule screen looking for molecules which could kill these cells. We screened 650,000 molecules and found like 30 of them, which seems to specifically kill these cells, not these. And now we're in the process of doing a combination to see whether it could kill those cells. And this is my group, and they are trying to do a number of things in the lab. And this is, again, work was initiated in Bob's lab, and a number of collaborators in Baylor, and he collaborated with Naya Kimura, a number of people here, and then funding support from a number of agencies. And thank you all.